Welcome to an Arsenal podcast, The Clock and Talk. I'm your host, Tez. Join myself, Tony, Carl, Schmidt and Savvy as we talk Arsenal. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You're with us here at The Clock and Talk. I'm Tez and I'm back. And I have to thank Schwinn. How are you, mate?
Pretty good. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all our listeners and our followers. And glad you're back.
Yeah, thanks, mate. And thanks for taking the hosting seat while I was away, mate. Great job.
Anytime. Thank you, Tez.
And Tony's with us. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Thanks yourself.
Yeah, good, mate. Good little break and a few rums and a couple of cigarettes, mate. Bit of a sore throat, but anyway, we'll battle on and move on, mate. And Savvy, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. How about you? Happy New Year to everyone and you.
Yeah, good, mate. Good and happy New Year to you too, buddy. Okay, let's get straight into it, guys. And we'll start with Tony and go around the table. So, Chelsea, mate, what was your take on the game? And we'll start with the lineup.
So looking at the lineup, just looking at it on paper, without sort of any prior knowledge, you thought top half pretty much at full strength with current injuries, and then the back five looked a bit, well, more than a bit shaky. But then, I mean, there was reasons for all of them. Obviously, Maitland-Niles played because Kolasinac was injured. Holding and Chambers played due to injuries to Koscielny and Monreal. And obviously, Hector's guaranteed his place. So the team was... It looked bad on paper, but it was also expected with the injuries we had. That was pretty much it on the team news.
Yeah, what Chambers, Mustafi, Holding? What did you think of them three at the back line?
I genuinely thought Chambers was awful, like just in every aspect. Not awful is a bit harsh. I thought he was very bad. And it wasn't just like his tackling was off or his positioning was off. It was everything. He was giving the ball away. He didn't look calm. He didn't look comfortable. It's strange because if you look at him and Holding, he's the one that's been playing and Holding's the one that's not. But Holding looked 10 times more comfortable on the ball. They seemed to target Chambers more. It was like they saw him as the weakness. And it was also Holding that was, if anything, playing out of position, as he's always played as the right of the back three for us.
Yeah,
and he was playing on the left, which... Yeah. I think he only ever played in his first game there at Middlesbrough. Beyond that, he's never played there. So it is a bit of a strange one, really. But yeah, I thought Chambers was bad. Mustafi was quite similar to who he was at Crystal Palace. He had a really good period and then he just sort of dropped off the edge of a cliff and had idiot moments, which he's way too prone to doing. And yeah, Holding, I thought he had a decent game. I wouldn't say good. He got caught out by... the ball at the end when Zappacosta hit the bar, the ball over to Morata was poor positioning from Holding, really. I don't think you can blame any of the three centre-backs. Well, I think for the second goal, you can probably blame all five defenders, really, for the second goal. Maitland-Niles, I thought, had a very good game, but it was a very amateur mistake to let Zappacosta get the cross in. And I think it came from being too confident. I think if that happens in the first 5 minutes, Maitland-Niles doesn't let that cross come in. But where he'd had a good game and he'd been comfortable, he hadn't been tested defensively at all. I think he just, he dealt with it very easily. I think he was just in a position where, I've dealt with everything today. And he got a bit, I don't want to say cocky, because it's just he thought he could deal with something and he should have just, if he'd gone back to basics, it wouldn't have happened. Obviously, Alonso's come from the left, so Hector's let him go. But then he's also ran across all three centre-backs. And don't get me wrong, it's a brilliant finish from Alonso. But I think there's a small blame for the feet of all five of the defenders for that goal.
Okay, your internet's playing up a bit, mate. But so I'll move on to Schwinn. Schwinn, what was your take on the game, mate? I'd like to know your thoughts on Cech as well, because a lot of people were calling him man of the match.
Well, he was for me as well. I mean, he kept us in the game. Let's not forget that Morata had, two or three chances that were, I mean, as clear-cut as they can get. He had time to, I mean, place it wherever he wanted it to. Starting from the very first attack, I think Chelsea had, that there was miscommunication between Callum Chambers and Mustafi, I think, for the first one. And then at the very end where Morata fluffed his lines. But, I mean, despite those two chances, I think whenever Chelsea were attacking, which was not a whole lot, to be honest, we had the lion's share of the possession. At least that's what it felt like. I haven't seen the stats. But whenever they attacked, it felt like they were creating something and they were causing us trouble. And Cech was on point that day. Mm. Other than that, Mesut Ozil starting was good to see. It was good to see him back in the lineup because he missed out the game at the Hawthorns. But, I mean, it just showed what he brings to the team. He runs the game. There's always been criticism that he goes missing in the big games. And three of his best performances this season have come against the bigger teams. So it's good to see him taking up that mantle. He's showing some real leadership out there, and which is really strange because Mesut Ozil is perhaps one of the most introverted footballers, you would say, when you're looking at, the field of play. So it's good to see him grow in that stature as well. On balance, I would say the result was fair because both teams had a lot of chances and, more importantly, both teams had a lot of missed chances. I would say that they created some really high-quality chances, but there were a couple of, instances, if you will, where we were so close to scoring. I mean, that Sanchez shot that Courtois, moved onto the post and then it hit the other post was obviously very, very close to going in. Lacazette had a couple of turns in the box that put his marker on toast, and Courtois again was able to save both of those chances. One was with Lacazette's right, and one was with his left. I think he dwelled on the one that he took with his left just a little too much, looking for the perfect connection and not looking at where the ball should be going. But I mean, that's nerves for a big game like that. I know we'll move on to the penalty at some point.
Yeah,
that was my take.
Come to that. Yeah, now since you just brought up Lacazette, because I was going to ask, is what is it with Lacazette? Do you think he's trying too hard?
Look, any good striker wants to be involved in the game, and someone like Lacazette who has thrived off running. I don't want to say running behind defenders, but he has thrived off quick attacks. At Lyon, they wouldn't really play the ball around that much, I would imagine. I've not seen too many of those games, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But I would imagine that they were quicker in terms of getting the ball from the back of the defense to getting a shot on target. We try to maximize the quality of our shots instead of just having a crack every now and then, which is a debate in itself. But he does get isolated, and because most defenses against us, including Chelsea, during the last game, they were pretty deep. So any good striker would want to get involved and get on the ball more. I was actually having a look at an average position map of the players, and Alexis Sanchez was very much the highest player in terms of where he was in the field, followed by Mesut Ozil, and then Lacazette was further behind than Mesut Ozil on this average position map. So it does show that he does drop, but that doesn't take away anything from our game because his movement and his the way he creates lanes is so good that even if he's dropping deep, that means he's leaving positions open because he's dragged a defender with him. And a player like Alexis, which we saw at the very end, he made a diagonal run from the left to the right and Mesut Ozil played him through. And that was another chance that fell eventually to Lacazette, and he just wasn't able to get a clear angle towards goal. So that movement is a little bit in tune with that. But, of course, we want him at the very top and we want him to be slotting in the goals, which are not coming right now. There's no denying that.
Well, it's not even that he's slotting the goals in. He had three shots the whole game. I want more from my striker. Three shots
isn't good enough. But, I mean, he's not... I mean, that's the thing with Lacazette. A lot of people thought he's that fox-in-the-box, predator sort of thing, He is that, but he is having to tailor his game a little bit. And that's good to know. I mean, if what worked at Lyon worked at Arsenal, he'd not be evolving, and then we'd be complaining, why is he not evolving? I think he's showing a lot of tools in his arsenal.
I think eventually he'll come into a bit of form, but I just think at the moment he's just going through a really patchy form. And I just think, I don't know whether it's, and I'll clip... let Tony have a little bit of an input on it as well. Are the midfielders, is it the midfield not getting the ball to him in the correct position? Is it him not running into the holes? Or is it just he's not, his shots, total three shots on target for the whole game?
Well, all I'll say is that he's playing in a different system and he's having to satisfy a different role. So to see him still give his 100% effort, and let's not forget, I don't think he had a bad game, just to reiterate that. He did miss a couple of chances, which he should have slotted in. But everything else, I think, was very, very good. Mm. So I'll let Tony take it from here. But in my view, yes, the goals are have dried up a little bit. But his contribution to the team as such, in my mind, is still very much good in terms of where it should be, maybe a little more. But I don't have any qualms about Lacazette. I think he'll find the net once, and after that, he won't stop scoring.
Okay. I'll come back to you, Tony, because I'll go to Savvy. Mate, what was your take on the game, mate?
Yeah, on the lineup, I think it was our best lineup available. So I had no complaints on the lineup. Then moving on to the game, I think defensively, I think we were very, very open. Very, very open at times. Those 3-4 chances to Morata, any other striker, and their goals. And then we'll be looking at 2-0 when we didn't even score. So that's something we have to look at. Defensively, we were poor in that game. And then on Lacazette, I'll say, I think I agree with Schwinn. Overall, he has been very good. The build-up play, when we involve him, when he comes deep, his touches and everything, I think everything looks on point. But yeah, for the goals, I think they have dried up and he's trying a little too hard to score. That was evident with couple of chances he had in the game. I think if he had scored in last few games, then he would have just slotted them in, because we know he's finishing. It's very good. But yeah, it's understandable also, because he hasn't scored in, I think, 6-7 games. So for a striker, for a number 9, it's a dry spell. But otherwise, I think his overall play, his link-up play with everyone involved, with Alexis Sanchez and all, I think it's been very good. And overall, his game has been good. So, yeah, as Schwinn said, one goal, and then I think he'll get his confidence back, and then he'll be scoring more goals. On Ozil, I think Ozil was the man of the match for me. From our side, definitely, because I think he was brilliant. His touches, he was creating the space for everyone in midfield. And I think he was creating chances. He created one or two very good chances where we should have scored. And other players, I think Maitland Niles, I think he had a very good game. Yeah, he was caught up for the goal, for the second Chelsea goal. But overall, he had a very good game. And it was evident, because Antonio Conte had to sub Victor Moses off, because Maitland Niles was running him over. So he just switched him off for Zappa Costa. And I think overall, if we forget that penalty, I think Bellerin had a good game after a while. He was running forward. He was using his pace well. I remember in one instance, I think he took Marcus Alonso on and just left him for dead. And that was really good to see from him, because really we see our players running in behind the defenders. And Bellerin, as we know, he's very pacey. He used his pace well at times. And the goal he scored, I think it was a very good goal. Probably the best he has scored in his career. And yeah, I think Wilshere started the game a little slowly. Then he grew into the game, scored a very good goal. There were debates.
Had Wilshere not have scored that goal, though, had he had a good game? Oh, it was a cracking goal, don't get me wrong. But had he not have scored that goal, would he have had a good game?
By that time, it was an okay game, an average game. But after he scored, I think he grew into the game more and he looked more confident. But before that, he wasn't having a very good game. He didn't commit any mistake, but yeah, it wasn't a typical Jack game, which we have been seeing in past few games. And Xhaka, I think, yeah, Xhaka was playing safe. He was also on point. He didn't do anything silly. And but yeah, nothing fancy also. But yeah, I rate that performance as a 7 from Xhaka. It wasn't bad at all. And Alexis Sanchez, I think he was also good. He was trying hard. It's good to see that he's his work rate is coming back on. And
I can't handle Sanchez. For me, yeah, he runs around like a fucking headless chook losing the ball everywhere.
Gets
in everyone's road.
Yeah, it's I think yesterday he was trying something. He was looking for Lacazette at times. His shot, I think he was unlucky not to score when Courtois made that save. And otherwise, also, I think, yeah, he was trying good. His link-up play with Ozil and Jack Wilshere at times was unplayable for Chelsea and their players. Other players, overall, offensively, we had a good game, but defensively, we were in shambles, and had it not been Morata, it would have been a loss for us. But on the balance of the play, I think it was a fair result. Draw was probably fair because both teams had good chances to score. They just didn't take that.
Yeah. All right, Tony, I've fucking hammered everybody here. I've hammered, like I said, Jack, and I've also hammered Sanchez. Let's touch on Lacazette first, mate.
No, it wasn't his best game. And I think he's just... I don't know. It's a mixture for me of tiredness because he's obviously used to winter break and being woefully short of confidence. I said at the time I wasn't a big fan of it, but that his goal that got disallowed at Stoke, he didn't know he was offside, and it's come and he's lashed it in top corner, left foot, not even thought about it. He's just hit it. In a way, the second chance he missed, the one on his left foot against Chelsea, was very similar. It was a bit closer in, but not much different. And he took a touch, and there was a pause, and then he just ended up not placing it. He just hit it. And that's confidence. He's thinking about it. Whereas what he'd done at Stoke, look, I know the goal was disallowed, but it was natural. He just hit it. The chance in the first half, he'd done very well to work the space for himself, but then it was a horrible contact on the ball, and it was a pretty routine save for Courtois. And again, you'd expect him to score that. And also the other one in the second half, the third shot he had on target. Again, it was a good save from Courtois, but it wasn't convincing from Lacazette. He kind of had too many touches and the ball got stuck under his foot. I think it's just a case of one of them. He needs a goal to go in off anything, off his knee, off his nose, and it will remind him that he can score goals. Mm. I think as well, and someone, I can't remember who it was, I saw someone else bring this up on Twitter, and there is a case to be argued that Lacazette is a lot better with Ramsey in the team because there's someone else breaking into the box to make them late runs and give the defenders a headache. And
yep.
Lacazette hasn't scored since Ramsey's been injured. And Lacazette's last two goals were both assisted by Ramsey against Man United and Huddersfield. So there is a case for maybe there's not anyone taking defenders away from him, so he's getting too much attention.
And you're dead right with Ramsey because Shaka, Jack, Ozil, they seem to get the ball to him. And this is my criticism with Sanchez. Sanchez seems to get in Lacazette's road and he doesn't seem to link up play with him.
I don't personally agree with that. I think you don't want... I think the issue is with Lacazette is he is too isolated. I think you want someone, not in his way, but close to him within touching distance. I mean, even if you look at his assist against Liverpool for Ozil, it came from an Ozil overlap. They could have touched each other as they ran past each other. I think the opposite is the issue. We've been leaving him too isolated, and especially where a lot of teams are either defending deep or playing three centre-backs, the sole focus is on him. And it's always going to be very hard to work space in that short... work a chance in that short amount of space. So I think that's more of an issue there, whereas Ramsey takes people away from him with late runs, takes defenders away. I think at the moment, as good as Ozil's playing, and I think Sanchez has been very good since Palace, really, none of them really take defenders away from Lacazette.
Mm, okay. Oh, I'm happy to be corrected by you, mate, so that's all right.
I mean, there's a few, obviously, people have touched on other players. I thought Jack was very good breaking lines. He didn't do it a lot. Take the goal away. He didn't do anything, like he didn't lay chances on a plate for everyone, but the amount of times he broke that first line, which then leaves usually Kante isolated against Ozil and Sanchez, I think that's something that we don't usually do. We don't usually break lines. We don't usually get people the other side of the ball, whereas Jack dribbles out with it. I mean, obviously, Fabregas got booked for a foul on him that was never a foul, but it should have been booked about 10 seconds before because Jack beat him down the line and he was pulling him back. There was another time when Kante done exactly the same. Jack beat him and he was just pulling him back. I think breaking the lines with the ball, although risky, is so rewarding. Like, you don't, the rewards are that it gives Ozil or Sanchez space, which that's never going to be quantified in stats.
Yeah.
But it's so important. Obviously, if you can give the ball to Ozil in space, whereas if Jack just passed that ball out, then there's still, they've got two deep players that aren't committed. Whereas Jack commits someone to him and beats him, and then it gives him space. There's nothing, look, he might only beat him over 5 yards. I'm not saying he goes on lung busting runs, but it just takes another defender out of the game, quite high up the pitch as well, which gives him space. Yeah, I didn't think Sanchez was bad. I didn't think he was great. It was a hard game. I thought, I don't know, just an average performance. One I do want to touch on is Hector. I've been the biggest critic of him, and I still am, to be honest. But I thought he had quite a bad first half, and I thought he was pretty good in the second half. Where Savvy's talking about the run that beat Alonso, it was like 30 yards from our goal. He knocked it past him and ran. He done well, but I actually feel a bit sorry for Hector, and this won't go down well. I actually blame Ozil, because in this formation, Ozil wonders, which is brilliant, and it makes Ozil look great because he wonders and there's no one picking him up. Yeah. But if you look when Hector gets the ball, there is never, ever an option for him to go down the line because Ozil is elsewhere. I mean, you win some, you lose some, obviously, because it makes Ozil better and he's our best player. So I don't particularly blame him, but it does Hector no favours because he gets the ball, he looks down the line, there's nothing there, and he always has to turn back, and he's always been very shaky with his back to goal. And it causes problems because he's forced down the tunnel. It's actually quite interesting to hear Schwinn say about the average positions of the game. I'd love to see that because for this point, like I'd fought at this point before and I wanted to see the average position. And I bet in general there's no one sort of within a reasonable distance to Hector down the line. So where say Maitland-Niles gets the ball and he'll have Sanchez down the line, he'll have the keeper and a centre-back, keeper backwards, centre-back slightly inside him and Xhaka or Wilshere sort of inside him on a kind of parallel.
Yeah.
Hector's got a midfielder and a centre-back. So you're cutting down his options instantly. And as I said, I don't particularly rate him, but you've got to protect your players rather than hang him out to dry, and I feel we do that at times.
And that's a tactic that's got to be changed, you think?
It's difficult because you say what we're doing at the moment allows our best player to be our best player. Because where Ozil was wondering, he's never going to get picked up because that wing-back isn't going to go and follow him. Because there was at times in the first half, especially, well, I noticed it more in the first half, where Alexis and Ozil were pretty much standing next to each other. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It was working and Ozil was finding space. But it just meant whenever Hector got the ball, he had absolutely nothing on down the line. So it's difficult. You could say, oh, Ozil, go and stay on the right. And that would in turn help Hector. But then you'd lose so much from it. So it is a difficult one.
Okay. Schwinn, you got any that on any of that, Mark?
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'll tweet this this position map. I'll hopefully find it, and I'll tweet it through our account so that everyone has a look at it. But Tony's spot on, because when we played Chelsea, we usually start with a 3-4-3 when we play a back five or back three, whatever you want to call it. Against Chelsea, it was a little different. It was more like a 3-4-1-2 with Mesut Ozil being the fulcrum. Now, what Tony said is spot on because Alex Lacazette's position was deeper than the number 10 where Ozil was playing, and it was towards the right of Mesut Ozil. So the only outlet that Hector Bellerin had was Lacazette. He would come short, play a quick 1-2, or give the ball to Jack Wilshere, and he would spread it towards the left. So that's exactly what was happening. We take off a lot of width when we bring on Mesut Ozil in that number 10. But it's worth it in a sense because he's able to create, he's able to drop deeper and create more. So Tony there is spot on, and I'll have this position map tweeted so that people can have a look at what I was talking about.
No, it's just a query, and I know it's past tense and we're never really going to know the result. Do you think it would have been better playing four at the back and dropping Maitland-Niles to the left back and having, obviously, holding Mustafi Chambers?
It's tough to say. I mean, one of the key things that I was looking at before during the game was the Azpilicueta-Morata connection, because I think that has been the most fruitful connection in terms of a defender directly passing the ball to an attacker in the Premier League this season. I think they have they've scored 6 goals when Azpilicueta has directly passed the ball to Morata. And if you remember, the last chance that Morata had before Zappacosta hit the crossbar was an Azpilicueta ball over the top that Tony mentioned that Rob Holding got caught. I personally like the back four more any day, but when we don't have Koscielny or Monreal in there, then I thought it was the wise thing to do in terms of giving Holding and Chambers a little bit more solidity by throwing in Mustafi in there, who would have started in a back four anyway, but just someone next to Mustafi would have been a little suspect. So looking back at it, I think the back five was the right way to go.
Okay, back three. Okay. We've got to talk about a penalty, guys. So, Tony, straight off the bat, mate, was it a penalty or was it not?
I'm going to use a reverse of a football cliche. Like, the amount of times you hear it would have been given outside the area but didn't get given in. I think this is the exact opposite. If that's in the centre circle, Hazard doesn't go down because he doesn't need to, and the ref doesn't even consider giving a free kick. Because he's gone down, the refs made the decision. And look, did Hector touch him? Yes. Was it enough to go down? No. But there's some people from the school of thought that seem to think contact in or out the box is a foul. Mm. I think there's a problem with the panel that decides on whether it's a dive or not. Because what they should do is take out the word dive and basically have it as conning the ref. And there is no two ways about it. Eden Hazard conned the ref. He did get touched, and you could argue it was a penalty. I'm very 50-50 on it. I can see the reasonings for both sides. But if you make that rule, you get a 2-game ban for conning the ref, then it's so much clearer. Yes, Hazard got touched, and you could still award the penalty and still come back and give him a 2-game ban because he did con the ref. And just to hide any biasness from it, what Jack done, he would never, ever, ever get done for diving because there was contact. But Jack initiated that contact, which means if they changed it from dive to con in the ref or some other fancy word of way of saying con in the ref, Jack could also get banned. What was either of them dives? No. Did they both con the ref? Massively. Mm. So on whether it's a penalty or not, as I said, you'll get some given and you'll get some that won't. There was contact. Was it enough to go down? No. But that's a player's prerogative, and especially Eden Hazard on an away game. He's the most fouled player in the league, and there's a reason for that. He feels contact and he goes down. And by the does he dive, you'd say by what people think a dive is no, because he has been touched and he does it very well. But for me, as I said, you could literally eradicate, not all diving obviously, but you could eradicate a huge issue by just changing that panel to say conning the ref or bringing the game into disrepute or some sort of something along those lines rather than saying a complete dive. Because to be honest, it's very, very rare you get complete and utter dives now because the players are so clever and do it so well.
So that was in your analogy, it was in the centre of the field and he made contact, Hazard wouldn't have gone down.
Oh, no chance. Absolutely no chance.
Yeah. Okay, Savvy, what's your take on the penalty, mate?
Yeah, I think it wasn't a dive, but it was, he over-exaggerated the contact. And I have to go back to the Nias incident. Striker from Everton, where he was banned 2 games for over-exaggerating the contact. So, if Hazard doesn't get a ban for this, and 90% he's not getting a ban for this, so that's double standards from the FA, and he definitely over-exaggerated that contact. The contact was on his boot, and he went down holding his shin, and that's clearly cheating for me. So he cheated. And on Jack incident, Jack, actually what I saw, I think it was also a dive, but Eden Hazard, he clearly exaggerated that contact. And FA have already banned the player. I think it was a two-game ban for Nias for over-exaggerating the contact against Crystal Palace. So if they are not banning Hazard for this, it's double standards from FA, probably because it's a bigger club, bigger player, and I don't know what, but it has to be corrected, and I think VAR is clearly needed in Premier League.
Okay, Schwinn, what's your take on it, mate?
Look, there was contact, as everyone said before. It was minimal. It probably wouldn't be given. Probably most definitely wouldn't be given outside the box. But my issue with this is a little different. I mean, I remember growing up when I used to play football, our coach always used to tell us, and I tweeted this after the game too, that always remember that you're not playing against 11 idiots, you're playing against 14 idiots, insinuating that the referees are always idiots. Mm. The fact that Hector Bellerin reached out for that ball and did not win it cleanly is what bothers me. It was horrible decision-making. Maybe it was lazy decision-making at that point. I know it's hard. It's been extremely harsh to go on him like that because he eventually remedied that and scored the equalizer. But for me, if you reach in like that, you have to make sure that you're going to win the ball 100%. And he gave Hazard a reason to go down. Hazard made the most of it, as the boys said. He sold it. There's no other way of putting it. And Anthony Taylor obliged. We have to be better in terms of decision-making. Now, I know we'll come to the Callum Chambers one, and that was something that we could not have done a single thing about. But here, we have to make sure that when we know there is precedent, and many, many a times when we've seen that decisions have gone against us, we need to be aware of the fact that we need to do all we can in order to make sure the referees don't fuck it up. And when you reach in like that against a player like Hazard, who is very dangerous in that sort of area, wherever he's in the box, he can be dangerous. You just don't give him a reason to go down. Get closer to him. Close him down instead of, you know, use your body instead of using your, instead of flinging your foot at it. And that's my issue with it. You know, we gave him a reason. We gave Anthony Taylor a reason to bring the ball to the spot, and he obliged. And I'm still fuming about that. I'm still fuming.
Yeah, me too. And I'm just going to say it as it was. what I thought it was. That fucking Hazard, he's a diving prick. He come in, Bellerin, he come in, and there was, I felt that he went the same time, and I have to agree with Tony, if it wasn't in the box, he wouldn't have fucking fell down, and he's a diving prick, and he should get a two-game ban. As what Savvy said, though, I don't agree with you, Savvy, on Jack diving, though, mate. I've got some notes written on it, because when I was watching the game, but I thought it was a clear penalty, that one.
The Jack one.
You there, mate?
Yeah, the Jack. I think it was outside the box.
Yes, yeah, but you said Jack dived.
Yeah, it looked like a dive because he just put his leg onto the challenge and it looked like a dive, but obviously he was going down with the contact, so it could have not been a dive, but it clearly looked like that when I saw the replay.
Okay. What's your take on the Jack one, Tony?
I mean, I said earlier, Jack made the contact. For me, it's not a foul. For me, it's deceiving the ref. So again, if we went by the panel, I'd changing it to what I just suggested. It's a booking and a ban because he made the contact. And look, everyone knows that listens to me regularly that I'll defend Jack to the hills. But he made the contact. He went out of his way to make sure the defender touched him. So, look, at the time, in the game, I thought it was a foul. I'll be honest, I was over there. I was sort of 30 yards away from it in the stands, and I thought it was a foul. But having seen it back, for me, it's not as bad as Hazard's, but it's not far off because, as I said, he made sure the defender touched him and not vice versa. People will say it's being clever, and when they get away with it, people say, oh, he's clever, he knows what he's doing there. But for me, it's just... it's something that should start being looked into.
Okay. Right, does anyone want to add anything else on that? Schwinn?
I just want to say one thing before we move ahead, because we're on the topic of referees and you know, dives and whatnot. There was a moment in the match, and I mean, this is open for debate. This was just my interpretation. But there was a moment in the match where Cesc Fabregas and Alexis Sanchez hugged it out. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I remember.
Now, I thought that was a very, very wise and clever move from Cesc Fabregas to sort of hug Sanchez and bring a smile on his face. Because at that point, Alexis Sanchez was really fired up. And it shows how clever a player like Fabregas, not just in his skill in terms of playing finding a pass and playing it, but in terms of how he plays the opposition. He suddenly hugged Sanchez and put a smile on his face. because of their prior Barcelona connection or whatever that was. But and then Sanchez sort of again, you know, was comfortable. An angry Sanchez is not what you want to face. And what Wilshere did to Fabregas later on was sort of very similar in nature. Maybe I'm just thinking, you know, bollocks here and you guys feel differently. But I thought Wilshere has that sense of cleverness, which we lack. He is that pit bull, needless to say, but he's also clever. He's one of the few Arsenal players, if only, who sort of, you know, can look at the game from the surface, from an outside perspective, and see what is happening. And to sort of go in on Fabregas like that and not even give him a hand to, you know, to bring him up to feet and just walk away from the scene, I thought was very clever in terms of letting Fabregas know that, you know what, I see what you're doing. We can do the same and we can play you on that level as well. So I thought that was extremely good presence of mind from Jack Wilshere.
Okay. I've got one word. Anything else on the Chelsea game before we move on, lads? Nope. Okay. Pretty much covered that one. I just wanted to... There was one thing that caught a few people's eyes, and Twitter lit up after Sanchez gave a little hug to a certain player, Tony. Did you, what was it like in the stadium, mate?
To be honest, Cesc always gets a mixed reaction at the Emirates. Some people boo him, some people still cheer him. But to be honest, during the game, I was talking to the bloke next to me, and I still think he's the best player I've seen play for Arsenal at the Emirates. And it's very tight between him and Ozil, but for consistency, I'd probably say it was Fabregas. So there is still a lot of Arsenal fans that look back on him with fondness, I think. The way he left the club was a joke, but not everyone knows that. So there was no reaction to it, really. I mean, we moaned about, because it didn't really look like a foul. It's one then that you know will get given because of where it is on the pitch, but there was more people moaning about what we felt probably wasn't a foul on Fabregas by Sanchez rather than the hug. There was no reaction to it at all, really. It was just, as I said, it was more groans because it didn't really look like a foul. I've seen it back in it and it was, but it's one of them that looks like because the ref doesn't want to get it wrong in that area, he gives a foul. And I mean, yeah, it wasn't
much.
As I said, there was no reaction to the hug or anything.
Yeah, okay. Now, since we're talking about refs and fouls and whatnot, a few Arsenal fans are saying VAR would have sorted a lot of things out during that Chelsea game, hence the penalty. It wouldn't have been a penalty if we had VAR in and whatnot. What's your take on that, Tony?
I may be stealing a bit of Schwinn's thunder here because we kind of spoke about this on Twitter, but... I think people are pinning way too much hopes on VAR. I think it should come in. I think it has to. It's inevitable. And we're going to see it from as early as Monday. I can't remember. Crystal Palace, Brighton on Monday and then us against Chelsea on Wednesday. It's coming into play. Mm-hmm. But I think people are pinning way too much hopes on it. Like, for example, that Hazard penalty, I think probably still would have been given with VAR. Because was there contact in the box? We can be as biased as we want. There was contact. Mm. So there's not huge grounds to overturn that. Where it would come... Look, there is times it would be helpful. The penalty against West Brom, I doubt, would ever have been given with the use of VAR. And there's other things that... But as I said, there's other decisions that are wrong or that we can conceive to be wrong that wouldn't be overturned just because of what they're using VAR for. And obviously, football is very subjective. Like, you didn't see Jack as a dive... I Savvy saw it as a complete dive. You didn't see it as a dive at all. I saw it as Jack making contact. Mm. The VAR is going to be one man deciding. So whatever one he chose, there's still two of us that are going to think he's wrong if you're looking at a three-way situation.
Yeah, true.
So and it's like the Lacazette offside against Stoke. I mean, offside isn't so much down to interpretation, but unless you get the freeze frame at exactly the millisecond that the ball was touched for the through ball... You're still going to get some wrong calls because it's all football. Again, it's down to interpretation. So, will VAR help? Yes. Is it the be all and end all? Most certainly not. Schwinn is probably best placed to talk about this because they have it in the MLS. And I mean, I don't watch any, so I'm assuming he watches more MLS than me. But I think people are pinning way too much hopes on it.
No. Just quickly though, before I go to Schwinn, Is there much talk around, because you're in and around London and whatnot in the stadium, is the press talking about it over there much, or is there much talk about it, VARs coming into the Premier League and whatnot, or?
Well, I think it just seems so obvious that it's not like back page news every day, because it's inevitable. It has to come. Mm. I don't know if you noticed. I heard on the radio when I was coming back from the Arsenal game, actually, that FIFA are trying to fast track it for the World Cup. So there was meant to be a meeting in May, I think, and they wouldn't, even if it was agreed, which it will be because FIFA is the most corrupt agency in the world. It wasn't going to be ready in time for Russia. But I believe that meeting's been brought forward and FIFA are trying to rush it in for the World Cup. Obviously, in England, they're trying it with, as I said, the FA Cup games where the grounds are capable of having it. The League Cup games, like us against Chelsea's having it in both legs. Bristol City against Man City isn't having it at Bristol at Ashton Gate, but is at the Etihad. So they're trialling it. Mm. It'll be involved in the final at Wembley as well, I'd imagine. And as same goes for the FA Cup. It'll be involved in the semis and the final and all games where essentially there's two grounds that are capable of having it, which is, I'm going to assume, pretty much all of the Premier League grounds. So I think if it goes successful, there will be hiccups, but if it appears to work within these trial games, then I'd be surprised if it's not in the league next season, to be honest. But there's nothing that's, it's not like there's big campaigns and petitions for it, because it is just inevitable.
Okay. Right, Ashwin, we'll go to you, mate.
Look, I have two big issues with VAR. The number one is stopping the flow of the game. Now, I know this is a tough one because we don't know how it will pan out in terms of how much stoppage there will be when a referee has to refer to the screen in order to make a decision. If that decision in turn helps the game and makes the game fair, then maybe it's worth it. Maybe it's not. I'm no one to pass a judgment on that, but that's just something to consider. Football is unique because of its non-stop 45-minute plus 15-minute break plus 45-minute thing. And the last thing I wanted want for football to become is like American football, where there's a commercial every 2.5-3 minutes. So that's one thing to remember. But the second and the most important thing about VAR is not the technology. Let's not forget that at the end of the day, it is going to be humans using this technology. And as Tony said, football is so subjective that me and you can look at an incident and just completely, you know, disagree on what was what. Now, if you look at the two recent penalties given to us, the one against West Brom and the one against Chelsea, I think the West Brom one gets easily turned out, and they say, no, it's not a penalty. The Chelsea one, again, is a little dicey. My idea in terms of bringing VAR is that the rules need to be made more concrete. They need to be made more... They need to be tailored in order to, as Tony said, that, you know, maybe don't call it diving, maybe call it play acting or you know, deceiving the ref. There has to be certain boundaries that the rules entail within themselves, which are very much open right now. Now, a lot of people would disagree with me on that, because that's one of the reasons football is football, that it's open to interpretation, and there is a conscience that goes along with the rules that helps referees make decisions. But when we are seeing just within this season, you know, I mean, we can go on and on about even the last 10, 15 years, how decisions have gone against us or any other team for that matter. We've seen a pattern of it being disruptive. And someone put a beautiful thread on, well, not a beautiful, but someone put a shocking thread on Twitter about how we've already lost about 21 points, I think, because of bad decisions that have gone, well, because of wrong decisions gone 15. Against us. 15, was it? Yeah, so, I mean, it just shows, right, how much of an impact it's having. Usually refs will make the argument that it's going to level out at the end of the season, but that's clearly not the case. And, you know, for someone who's trying to maybe challenge at the top or fighting relegation, it's not going to even out, because either if you miss out on, you know, European competitions, or if you're thrown out of the Premier League because you're relegated, that's a big, big blow to absorb. So there is a lot of positives related to VAR. But we need to understand what this technology brings and how it's going to help us. And until the time we open our heads to that, I don't think it's going to help.
Well, I can comment on this because I follow on the A-League as well over here in Australia, and we have VAR. And I can tell you now, lads, it's a fucking circus. VAR over here, and Australian referees are a little bit, they're not as good as the Premier League and whatnot, so... they're not of the stature of you know, leagues around the world. But it has turned the A-League into a complete and utter fucking circus. Mate, every VAR decision that has gone to the VAR, they have got wrong. Fans got banners up at just about every ground saying get rid of it. There's petitions going around the country here to get rid of the fucking VAR. It's not the case of the technology. The technology is good, but it's the way it's being managed which isn't so good. And that's probably what it is back to what Tony said, one bloke in a box, he sees it with his eyes. All us see it with a different set of eyes. Coaches see it with their set of eyes. And it's always against what he says, funny enough. It's one of them cases, and I'll use the NRL where as another analogy. The NRL has video refereeing. They continually, they've had it probably five, 6 years NRL video refereeing. They've got, it's worse with video refereeing than what it was with a ref. The amount of decisions they actually get wrong is crazy, to a point they've set up a bunker with a team of analysis blokes to sit there and decipher whether decision's right or wrong, and they still get it wrong, and that's with a team of five or six blokes. When you've always got human to play with, with it, it's not a robot, it's not, you know, there's the line, they're offside, you're always going to get human error, and I think VAR isn't a good thing at all from what I see in the A-League. However, it might be better managed over there, but I also watch a bit of Serie A, and it's not liked over there as well. So, what's your in your country, Schwinn? You guys have got the VAR, and does it work there? Is it managed good or what?
Yeah, I noticed Tony mentioned that, and I very slyly avoided that whole subject because I don't watch the MLS at all. Just going off what you said, right, Tez? I mean, the problem is that, just another thing to add upon this, is the fact that we are looking at VAR as the savior. Let's not forget that it's going to be technology that will be our savior. So maybe we can revisit the whole thing. And, you know, I mean, look, for instance, if you look at the goal line technology that has come in, right, that has been so helpful for one reason and one reason only, that there is no room for human interpretation. The referee does not get to see how much of the ball had passed. The sensors, you know, dictate that, and they just sensors then send a message to the referee via that watch. So that's something we need. You know, I remember someone talking. I'm sorry for forgetting who it was, but how about something like putting chips, you know, inside players' boots? You know, microchips are so small these days that players won't even feel them, and then we can have cameras that sort of detect that. Okay, one full team of players is wearing one sort of chip and one full team of players is wearing the other sort of chip. So cameras and sensors can detect at a given point which sensor was further up the field. You know, we don't need technology that is operated by humans. We can have, technology is far ahead this way. You know, we can have that sort of stuff.
The problem
can I just shit on that sensor thing?
Yeah. I was just about
to have
well.
Their whole body covered in sensors apart from their arms. Because their
what's
chip
that? Makes, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Their whole body would have to be covered in sensors apart from their arm, which would never work. Because
it's an age, right? I'm not saying that should be the only yardstick. We'll obviously still have, you know, the linesmen and whatnot. It's just going to be a further aid, maybe. Maybe look at it that way. I mean, again, this is just another idea that was put out there. I'm sure it has many flaws. But my point was that people are still looking at VAR as the only way that this is going to be solved. And my idea is that it's going to be technology and not VAR
I'll put it like this to you. Would you like – you're never going to get a 100% call rate on every call. And the problem over here is if it was a clear error – and they were actually going to the VAR for a clear error, and they go, check that for us, maybe they might be able to tidy up a few of them loose errors. However, they don't. They try and rule on just about every fucking thing, taking
Yeah, you're talking about like it's done in cricket. when they go to Third Empire.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, and what they need to do is, and I don't know how it's going to be managed, but they need to try and just go to that video ref or the VAR on clear errors. Was it a penalty? Let's just double check it, guys. And then yay or nay.
Yeah,
you're always going to have a human error.
I have a bit of input here. Give me 2 seconds, because there was a meeting this morning about what VAR is going to be used for in the upcoming games, and what basically it will be allowed to be used for in English football. So what is it? There's only 4 ways they can use it. So goals, red cards, mistaken identity, and penalties are the only 4 circumstances it can be used in. I'm not 100%, but it's believed that offside will come into goal. So if someone scores and it's borderline offside, then they'll look at it. But the offside will only be looked at if it leads into one of those 4 categories of goals, red card, mistaken identity, or penalty. So it's not going to be every decision. It's not going to be every little challenge in the half in the centre circle is going to be looked at again and again. So it shouldn't.
That's fair.
In theory, it shouldn't break the flow up too much.
Well, that's good if they go that, because that means they've got a smart management team looking at it and looking at what the mistakes have been around the country or world or whatnot.
And I think actually it's on work in Bundesliga, and I follow a little bit of Bundesliga, and it's been going really well. VAR over there, it's like Premier League only. They go to VAR for like it's been said about British football. What Tony just mentioned, it's like that only in Bundesliga. They go for goals, red cards, or an offside calls, or some very bad fouls. When referee says that he needs to go to VAR, it's not like that everything will go to VAR. So I think it's working very nicely in Bundesliga, and there are many positives in that. And obviously, with the VAR referee, he always favors the benefit of the doubt is given to the referee's decision. So if it's marginal, like we could say Eden Hazard thing, I think it will be given as a penalty with VAR also, because there was contact. And but I think what it will eradicate is referees like Mike Dean, it's clear to see that they just hate Arsenal, and he was clearly biased over there.
Yeah, we'll get on to that now. Because we've got to wrap things up, boys, because we've fucking been dribbling on about this VAR for too long. So looks like it's going to come in, and let's hope they can fucking sort it out over there, as Tony said, with a couple of decisions. But Savvy, we'll go straight back to you, because you did mention the Mike Dean, mate. So when I mentioned Mike Dean and West Brom, what was your take on that?
Yeah, I think Arsenal should complain, and he shouldn't referee any Arsenal game from now on. I think he has been biased for too long, and it was clearly a biased decision. It was never a penalty, never ever a penalty. Any other team, and he's not giving that. And we have seen many instances with Mike Dean when he, for one, I know that's a joke, but he was celebrating a Spurs goal and whatnot, and he has given us many, many bad decisions. He has costed us many points, and I think Wenger has been right all over this when he has said everything about that. And it was never a penalty. Any other team, he's not giving it. So I think Mike Dean, he should stay away from Arsenal games, and VAR will be helpful in these kind of situations where the referee is being biased, or the level of refereeing is not up to the level. So that's the positive point of VAR, and that was clearly not a penalty. They just robbed us of 2 points over there. And I remember Stoke as well, the Lacazette goal and the Hector Bellerin incident. And we have already seen that tweet where it says that we have been robbed of 15 points already this season because of poor referee decisions. I think it's not 15, it's around 12 or 13, but it's lots of points, and they can be the difference in us finishing in top 4 outside of it. So it clearly makes a lot of difference. So it's something that needs to be looked at, and FA has always put their blind eye on Mike Dean or any other official who has been biased. So I think that's something that needs to change.
Okay, Savvy, quickly, Mike. Sorry, Schwinn. Go ahead, mate.
Schwinn.
Schwinn, sorry, I went Savvy.
All good. Just for our listeners to know, the next further couple of minutes are going to be full of a lot of fruity language. So if you want to tune that out, please do. Mike Dean is a fucking cunt. That's all I have to say about this.
I agree.
I don't care what has to be done. He needs to be out, not just for Arsenal matches, but for any matches. The standard has to be equal. He was fined. I think he was reprimanded last year. And then for one game, he was thrown into the championship, which is not really a punishment because then he came right back in. I don't get it. I mean, the precedent is there so many times. The man is a fucking jackass. Arsene Wenger kept asking him what it was about, and he kept saying that I'm talking. You can just see that he's taking his balls and putting in front of Arsene Wenger's face. You know, that's all it's about. Someone like Peter Cech, who does not ever get angry, he runs towards Mike Dean at the end of the game and politely asks him, "Can I have a word with you?" And then tells him, you know, we've spoken about this in the preseason. That Callum was so close to Gibbs that he didn't have, even a reflex action would not have gotten his arm away from that position. And again, to be fair to Callum, his arm was not in an unnatural position. Anyone running, when they come to a stop, momentum will take your, you know, arms into some position or the other. And credit to Callum for not, you know, letting his arms, you know, be outside of his body, like laterally towards outside of his body. He was still in front of him. So how he's seen that, I don't think he has, as Wenger said. And I think it's just going off a gut and trying to, you know, make the final game of 2017 or whatever all about himself, or just any game all about himself. It's unfair. It's biased. It's harrowing. It pains me. I mean, I can go on and on about this. But all I want to say, that guy's a fucking cunt. Get him out of our game, or someone just shoot him in the head, because that's what he fucking deserves.
Well said. Tony, what was your take on it, mate? Penalty?
Never a penalty. That's not even questionable. I don't think you'd even find the most biased West Brom fan or Tottenham fan wouldn't say it's a penalty, or not with a straight face anyway. But I have an argument that I don't particularly think Mike Dean is biased. I think he's very incompetent. I mean, look, he was a ref against Tottenham. It was the last game he refed to get for us was Tottenham, where, let's be honest, we were the better team, but he had a horrible, horrible day with some big, big decisions that he got wrong. I just actually got it up. He was the ref. So, obviously, Savvy mentioned Stoke, but he didn't ref us then. He refed us against Leicester, where we won. We got a bit of a lucky goal, but then we also could have had a penalty. It's not... Interestingly, he didn't ref us for 7 months last season. Between October and May, he didn't ref us. I think the problem with Mike Dean, and it's a criticism that a lot of people label at him, and frankly, because it's true, is that he wants to be the star of the show. And he knows what he's doing, because it's never a penalty, but if we just get off that incident, it's the timing of it is what brings it in. As I said, there was a very similar incident. So the thread that people are talking about with how many points referees cost us, it is by a guy called Spanish Gooner, and I think his Twitter is at Spanish Gooner, L Spanish Gooner, if you want to have a look. He started this since the first day of the season because he thought it'd be interesting to see. And it is 15 points in 22 games. I mean, I've followed him for a while. But there's a clip on there of Mike Dean, a very similar example against Leicester, of one of our players, I think it was Kolasinac, I'm not 100%, kicking it against a defender who was about the same distance that Chambers was from Gibbs, if not a bit further, and Mike Dean didn't give the penalty. He said he was too close. So I just think Mike Dean just makes the game about him. I don't know if any of you saw the Tottenham West Ham game last night, but in the dying minutes, there was a block by a West Ham player in the area, which was... It's never handball, but it was worse than Chambers, and it should have led, by Mike Dean's rules, to a last-minute penalty and Tottenham winning the game. But he knows he's under the limelight at the moment, so he didn't give it. I think he's very calculated in that he makes the game about him, but I think biased is probably wrong. I think it's interesting that Wenger said he's going to dispute the charge, and Arsenal are, I don't know if this is common knowledge actually, Arsenal are putting together a video package of not just Mike Dean, but all the times the referees have given wrong calls against us this season. Because obviously he's being questioned for calling the for questioning the referee's integrity, because he said basically the decisions are consistently going against us. So Arsenal are compiling, and it won't be too far off what, as I said, if anyone wants to look at his Fred El Spanish Gooners video, Fred has tweeted, it won't be far off that what Arsenal compile and send to the FA, because 15 points out of 22 games is massive. And that's not including some decisions where... So in them points, he hasn't included Man City, where there was a clear offside goal and a debatable penalty, because we wouldn't have got any points from that game anyway. And there's also games where decisions have gone against us, like the Leicester one I just mentioned, where we won the game. So we haven't lost any points from that. So that's 15 points that he's calculated, whether you agree with him or not, that we've lost, without other instances also going against us. So it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the FA react to that. No, in the FA, they'll probably just ignore it, but... I mean, even off the top of the head, anyone can think of calls that have gone against us which were just completely wrong. Richarlison at Watford, obviously, the penalty West Brom. But then I don't say it evens itself out, but we have also had decisions gone in our favour, but it's nowhere near evening itself out. So it will be interesting to see if the FA takes seriously what Wenger's saying and how they react to it. But my feeling is they won't, because it opens a whole can of worms.
Yeah, I was just, as you were talking, I was just having a look, because I was actually interested to see whether Mike Dean is obviously tops the table of referees for the most penalties. All I could find was an article back in 2016, and he topped the table with the most penalties by any referee given in the Premier League. So I'd imagine he'd probably still top that list. So.
Yeah,
I don't know whether they overlook, whether the FFA ever look at that or not, but... Or question it. But yeah.
I do want to add, though, Tez, I'm going to come in real quick and just say that when I said biased, that's what I meant, actually. I didn't mean to say, you know, insinuate that he's a Tottenham fan, but he's biased towards himself. You know, I don't know if you guys heard across the pond, but Mark Clattenburg was recently in the States, and he was talking to the people who host the Premier League show here on NBC. And he talked about how, you know, he let Tottenham implode against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge that season when Leicester won the title, you know. And of course, as an Arsenal fan, I take a lot of, you know, glory from that, and it makes me feel great. But it shows once again that these referees, certain referees rather, who sort of see themselves as brands almost these days. Clattenburg, you know, Kolina was probably one of the first ones to do that. You know, when I say bias, they've sort of taken upon it themselves that they are the ones who are in charge of everything. The referee has two simple chores to do during a game. One is set the tempo, and then ensure that the tempo that has been set by him is consistent. That's it. You know, football's beautiful in terms of its subjectivity, but it has to be consistent. You know, and that's just not the case. And referees like Mark Clattenburg, Mike Dean, and dare I say Michael Oliver are also going into that line where they're just making the game about themselves and, you know, taking away from the spirit of the game, which just pains me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Okay, I haven't got much more to add any on that, but I just want to touch on some injury updates. So we've got Monreal, he's due back any day. He has an ankle. Kashani, due back any day. Hip. Klasinac, ankle, 2 weeks. They're saying Shaq is out for 2 weeks with a groin strain. Ramsey's got another 5 weeks. He's got the hamstring. Santi Cazorla, they've updated him to 1 month now. He's been out for 443 days. And Giroud, hamstring, he'll be out for 2 months. Wow, that's really going to hurt us, isn't it? Giroud out for 2 months. Yeah, okay. Righto, guys. I also... got some. I just want to run through quickly some transfer news with everybody, and just let me know your thoughts, guys. I'll just go around the table. Just a quick yes or no. Do you want him at the club? Do you feel that a transfer may happen? So we'll start with you, Tony. We're still linked to mate, this fucking name, Fekir.
Nabil Fekir.
Yeah.
Not at this time. would be my answer to that.
Okay. Schwinn?
Again, not in January.
Savvy?
Yeah, I would like him. From what I've seen, he looks like a good player. So, yeah, yes for me.
Okay. And Zonzi? Tony?
No.
Schwinn?
Never.
Savvy?
Yeah, no.
And another bloke by the name of Malcolm.
Not seen enough of
him. The Brazilian.
Okay.
Yeah, I've not seen enough of him. I know he's highly rated, but I've not seen enough to form an opinion, if I'm honest.
Okay. Schwinn?
I haven't seen much of him either, but we just brought in a left back, so I don't think it would make sense to bring in another one.
Savvy?
It would crush Kolasinac's confidence. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I think we are covered in that position with Niles doing good and Kolasinac, so no.
Okay. Mahrez, Tony?
Yes, 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 yes.
For January?
Yes.
Okay. Schwinn?
I think Tony said yes 6 times, so I'll say it 7 times. Yes, 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 yes.
And Savvy?
Yeah, yes. Easy target. We should get him.
Okay. We've been leaked, and then we weren't leaked, and then Wenger came out and said he's not a target. What would you make of Aubameyang, Tony?
If I can spend a little bit longer than a yes or no on this one.
Yep.
I think it was last week, and I'm not sure if we recorded it or it was when we weren't recorded. I said that I used to work in journalism, and a lot of the way the links are made is they go, Team A needs this type of player. He is this type of player. He may be available, and do they have any links? So what they've essentially gone is, Sanchez is going, so Arsenal need an attacker. Aubameyang may be available. Arsenal have a link with Dortmund due to Sven. Oh, look, a transfer is happening. Let's print it. That, for me, is all. That's where that's come from. I can't see any other way where that's come from. I'd be amazed if we're actually looking at him, especially in January. I'm not saying, look, I would like him, but I just think it's absolute nonsense.
Okay. Schwinn?
Nope.
And Savvy?
Yes, if we are actually in for him.
What would you say? I'll just go back to you, Schwinn. No. Why the no, mate?
On the Birmingham. We don't need him.
Okay.
We don't need him. We have a striker in Lacazette. We have Olivier Giroud. They both are fantastic options in terms of the diversity they bring in terms of the talent. We need people who can break the lines and create stuff. I mean, if anything, during the West Brom game, it showed that when Mesut Ozil was not playing against a stubborn defense, we need someone who can be impactful outside the box, who can deliver something from outside the box. And secondly, his age. I don't think he's young enough. I think he's almost touching 30 at this point, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I think,
and,
I think 27, 28, I think.
Okay, I mean, to be honest, that's a good age. So I stand corrected there. That's peak age. Thirdly, I think I may be wrong about this, but I've heard that Aubameyang is someone who needs to be the center point of attention. And we can do away with that for now because we've seen what sort of problems that brings when we've had Alexis.
Yeah.
So I don't need that sort of X factor personality in the dressing room right now. We could do with some more calm people.
No, I wasn't criticizing. I just thought I'd just clarify that. That's all.
No, for sure. I mean, you can criticize because my theory does have a lot of loopholes in it, presumably. But that's just how I feel.
Oh, good, mate. Okay, 3 more. Would you believe we've been linked to Icardi, Tony?
I've not seen it. You mentioned it earlier. I've not seen any links. No, it won't happen, but this kind of runs into Schwinn's point. The reason we're being linked with strikers is obviously because we're going to need to replace Alexis's goals, and especially if you look at the average positions, which has now been tweeted by, I'm assuming, Schwinn. It looked more like a 10 behind two strikers the way we lined up against Chelsea. So if you take Alexis out and bring in an Aubameyang or an Icardi, it is like going a 2 up top with Ozil in behind. So, I mean, that's kind of where the links are coming from. But again, on Icardi, I'm always wary of Italian players. So I'd lean on the side of no. That's okay. Not to say he's not a very good player.
Okay. Schwinn?
Nope.
Savvy?
I like the player, but I don't think we need him, so no.
Okay. Gene Siri, Tony? We linked him last year, weren't we?
Yeah, we was linked to him all summer. His agent's been busy again. He was linked with Everton to replace Ross Barkley this morning. We've just got no interest, so it's one of them. It doesn't really matter what I think.
Yep.
It's similar to Nzonzi. We have no interest as a club, so
nice.
What is it? I'm not going to become one of them people that goes, "Oh, well, I wanted him," and then you cry when the club doesn't get him, even though the club never wanted them. So yep. It's just the club doesn't want him, and that's enough for me.
Yep. Schwinn?
Nope.
And Savvy?
No.
And last one, rumoured to be joining Chris Smalling. Tony?
Who, sorry?
Chris Smalling.
Oh. I mean, I don't know where that's come from. Again, I've not heard it, and then Mourinho wouldn't sell to us. So, no.
Savvy?
I wouldn't mind him considering us in the back situations, but yeah, it's never going to happen.
And Schwinn?
I mean, you could probably throw in David Luiz into this mix as well with Chris Smalling. Such a defender, whether it's Smalling or Chris. Hilarious. Whether it's Smalling or Luiz, I wouldn't mind getting on a short-term loan. I don't know if those deals are even possible. I don't know if Chelsea and United are interested in doing.
Yeah,
just till the end of the season, I wouldn't mind bringing in a Premier League defender to bolster the defence. But no, not really. Not long-term.
Would you have David Luiz on a six-month loan, Tony?
I think it would be a car crash at Arsenal, just the way he plays. We're way too open. He's not the best defensively. He's good with the ball. So it'd aid us in what we're good at and make us worse in what we're bad at. So, personally, no. And also, Asset's worth, I mean, I think they paid 30 to 40 million for him and they sold him for 50 million. Asset's worth that tend to not get loaned out. I can't remember the last time a player valued over, I don't know, 15 million was ever on loan. So,
yeah,
okay. I also think it's very unrealistic.
Okay, I'll rattle off those quickly. Rumoured to be leaving Hector Bellerin to Juventus is the rumour. Jack Wilshere, Tony, to Sampdoria.
Neither of these will go in January. Jack, the way he's performed in the last six games, will be looking a lot higher up than Sampdoria. They came in from in the summer, so I guess, again, it's just regurgitated news from them.
Yep. Mustafi, Juventus.
Not in January.
Ozil to Barcelona, still floating around. Colum Chambers to Southampton. And Oliver Giroud to Chelsea, but that's type of fizzled out a bit. So. Now,
could probably throw Theo Walcott into that mix too.
Yeah, I was just about to jump onto that. Walcott, now, I said to you guys at the start of the podcast, I'm fucked if I can find where they've got this headline from, but apparently Walcott has issued a come and get me plea to AC Milan. What did he send, an email to him, a text message, a fucking jump on the telephone? Explain to us, Tony.
He DM'd him on Twitter. Again, I've not read the story. I saw the headline and just thought it's a load of nonsense. So I didn't read it. I mean, look, I think Theo will go out this month. I think he'll be sold. There's a lot of news outlets that think it will be a loan, but I think he'll be sold most likely to Southampton with an off chance of Everton. But obviously Everton have just spent big money on an attacker, the Turkish bloke. So I think Southampton are looking the most likely. As I said, they've just brought in £75 million. I'd be amazed if Arsenal let them get away with a loan when you know they're very cash rich at the moment. So I'd imagine he'll be sold to Southampton this month.
And just quietly, I know an AC Milan fan that listens to us religiously, so you'll need more than fucking Theo Walcott to help you, buddy. Okay. there was something else I was going to touch on. Schwinn. There was a little tweet of sarcasm during last week. I think it was. I was away. So fill us in quickly. El Neni to Sanchez.
Oh, wow. You gave this one to me. I was hoping you'd just cover it. But since you've been so kind, let me tell everyone how much I don't like Mohamed El Neni first. I don't like Mohamed El Neni at all, to be honest with everyone. But this might be the greatest thing he's done ever since he's been born. And I think that tweet... It was brilliant. It was so brilliant because not just the fact, the tweet, right? But if you look at the people he mentioned who are going to the World Cup, maybe there's a case to be made for a couple of them that they won't. Nacho Monreal is one who might not make the squad. You could make arguments against Hector Bellerin on current form as well. So just the fact that he added those people into the mix as well and then said Alexis Sanchez is not going. I think Jack Wilshere was a part of the group that's going to the World Cup as well, he mentioned in the tweet. I'm not sure. But it was beautiful banter. It made it even better because, you know, we all know Sanchez might be leaving. And we all know that Sanchez probably hated that, you know, considering the competitive guy he is. So I loved every bit of it. As soon as I saw it, I was laughing and I shared it with you guys and a couple of other buddies who are Arsenal fans, and it was fantastic. Silver cannon worthy tweet, in my opinion.
No, it was good. It was good. I got a good laugh out of it, actually, when you shared me. So no, it was good. Okay. Guess what, boys? We got a record fucking signing in January. Now, I'll give you $100 if you can pronounce his name.
Tony, probably butcher it.
We're just going to say the Greek bloke because I got nothing.
Yeah, I think anyone that says they've got anything on him, including how to say his name, probably lying. Had anyone heard of him 48 hours ago? Again, if anyone says they have, they're probably lying. I know next to nothing about him. It's a Sven signing. We're all hanging our hopes on Sven being this master scout. This is his first time he's done anything at our club, so let's see how it goes. This is what we brought him here for.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. We've got to see it, guys. And well, Kashani, Mustafi, they're not getting any younger, are they? So this guy will probably go out on loan, will he? Or will he hang around for the rest of the season, you think?
It was assumed that he was going to be signed to go on loan to Germany straight away, but he did train this morning. But that might be the case if he flew over for a medical and rather than have him do nothing. I don't know. He won't be involved in the first team as well. He's not expected to be. So a loan would make sense, but as I said, don't know. I haven't heard of him this time 2 days ago, so I'm not going to pretend I start knowing what the future plans are for him.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, just quickly talking about loans and young players, because last year we did a similar thing. How's that little Japanese kid going?
Stuttgart. He stayed at Stuttgart. I don't know how well he's done there. I mean, they took him back on loan for a second year. But again, I think that was a commercial signing more than a football signing, if I'm honest.
Okay.
Right, just on our Greek defender, some people call him Dinos. That's something that his old Twitter handle referred to him as. But I think Wenger said in his press conference today or yesterday or at some point that he will be loaned. He's not ready to Germany, to the Bundesliga. And I also read reports that Werder Bremen were very much interested.
Yeah, so that was the initial thought was we'd sign him and send him
straight.
Right, so that's something to keep an eye out for. He's definitely not going to feature. I don't think he's nearly enough ready, according to Wenger also. But that is something to watch an eye out for.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't be any worse than fucking El Nenny, could he?
Nope.
I'm going to cop it. I copped the last time I fucking flogged El Nenny.
Okay. You're going to get so much shit from clowns this time out, Tess.
Oh, the Facebook fans, they love it. Okay, so we've got a couple of questions. So I've got a few questions. So let's go through. We'll go around the table. Start with you, Tony. Zane Ali. Do you think Czech is getting undeserved criticism lately?
Yeah, I think we seem to get this question most weeks, and I think my answer is pretty much yes most weeks. Again, it feels like a regurgitated answer. Do I think he's the right man going forward? No. Is he getting criticism when he doesn't particularly do anything wrong? Yes. I mean, look, his penalty record's awful, but you're not really expected to save penalties, and if that's the only flaw you're gonna point at him, then it's really not such a bad thing. He made some good saves the other day. He commanded his box. His kicking is still awful. As I said, I'm not saying that he's the best keeper in the world and he's the man for us, but I think he is getting undue criticism. On the penalty thing, it's just an interesting one. Who do you think's got the best penalty save ratio in Premier League history?
No, history.
It will be better check, I think.
No.
It's a doozy. Yeah. Seaman? Who's pretty good at saving penalties? No?
No. An Arsenal keeper. A shit one.
Almunia?
Almunia.
Almunia. Well, yeah, so it just goes to show that I'd take Cech, who can actually save the ball but not save a penalty, rather than Almunia, who could save penalties and do not much else. I think there's quite an easy way to deal with Cech not being able to save penalties. Stop fucking giving them away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I have something to say on the penalties. I play football. It's a low-level football, but our coach always used to say that saving a penalty is always a chance. So you can never judge a goalkeeper on saving penalties. So I think that's obviously an unfair criticism for Petr Cech.
Schwinn, Alexis gone, Alexis replacement, midfielder reinforcements. Who? That was by Brendan.
He's asking for two players, essentially, a replacement for Alexis and a midfielder.
Alexis gone, Alexis replacement, midfielder reinforcements, who? Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it seems like he's asking me in an idealistic world, so I shall give an idealistic answer. Alexis replacement would be Paulo Dybala, and a midfielder would be Leon Goretzka. Let's move ahead.
And his Twitter is @ArsenalGinger. Thanks for the question. Okay, Savvy, the Texas Gooner.
Yeah.
A regular. Thoughts on utilising Ramsey on the right-hand side of the midfield in the back four system when he's fit?
Actually, I've been advocate of that. I actually said that before also, that we could utilise Aaron Ramsey on the right side with changing our formation and going back to a back four. So I would like that, but yeah, obviously it would take away the proper winger in our team, because he's not a proper winger. He'd mostly be inside, but it can be fruitful at times. I remember our performance against Napoli in the Champions League when we just signed Ozil, and that time we used to play Ramsey on the right side. I remember that. I think beautiful play, some of our best play during those days with Ramsey on the right, because there was some telepathy between the players, because we had Ozil, Ramsey, Cazorla, and they all just gelled well together, and we had a very good telepathy between the players. The coordination was very good, so it could work, and it could be a way to utilize Aaron Ramsey, Jack Wilshere, and Ozil in the same team. But definitely, it can have its flaws. With we lack some pace, we won't have another wide man. So yeah, for me it could work, and we could try that again. But definitely, we'll see if Wenger does that when Aaron Ramsey is back, because obviously Ramsey won't be happy sitting on the bench, and he would demand a start. So that is a way where we could mix all the players together and start them.
Okay.
I forgot to mention one thing, Tez. Sorry, I'm going to butt in again. But for the previous question that Brendan asked, I would love for us to sign this kid from Argentina. His name is Ezequiel Barco. He plays for Independiente. And I'm hoping with Raul coming in, that's someone we'll be looking at. He's been tearing it up in Argentina. And there have been a lot of links between him and a club in Atlanta, which is here in the U.S., so that could be a quick pit stop for him, because Tata Martino is the coach there, I believe, so that he could groom him pretty well. But this kid is going to be fire. And
what's his name?
His name is Ezequiel with a Q. Barco. Barco.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Yeah, so just check out a YouTube reel or something. And he's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay, Tony, one from Vish, and welcome back, Vish. I hope you had a good Christmas, mate. What were your thoughts on the performance from our young guns, Chambers, Holding, Maitland-Niles? Given that Koscielny Achilles has flared up again and his performance has dipped due to fatigue, would it not be prudent to utilise our two young centre-backs more often?
So, I mean, I've touched on both of their, well, all three of their performances earlier on when we spoke about the Chelsea game. In terms of using them more, yes, I think we should, but the reality is we have to, and we don't really have much choice. That any regular listeners as this is will know that I've been saying for a while now that I felt Koscielny needs to be dropped or rested, whatever way you want to. So, yeah, the answer is, I think they should both be played. Whether it's both at the same time, I'm not so sure. Look, we had to the other day. We had no option. One thing that I do find interesting, I mentioned this at the game to the bloke that was sitting next to me. Holden wasn't on the bench versus West Brom. So when Koscielny went off, Mertesacker came on. But then jump forward 2 days and it's Holden that gets the start with Mertesacker on the bench. So for some reason, Wenger's either not picked our strongest team against Chelsea or he's not picked our strongest bench against West Brom. And it kind of baffles me. I don't have an answer to that. It was just an observation I've made. But yeah, we need to use them two more, especially if they are ever going to be first team players. But I'm not sure about the benefits of using them together unless we absolutely have to.
Another thing, guys, I think Wenger has just been banned for 3 matches and fined 40K for criticizing referee Mike Cunt Dean.
Where was that link, Servi?
Yeah, I think it just popped up on... Yeah, it's confirmed news. He gets the ban.
Okay. Three-match ban, what, on Arsenal.com?
Yeah, right now I think it's not on Arsenal.com, but he gets the ban.
Okay, interesting.
It popped up on Bleacher Report, I think. Okay. But yeah, it's a confirmed news because they are not quoting any source. Yeah.
Okay, 3-match ban. Okay, just thinking of that, fucking hell. Schwinn, the Texas Gooner at Texas Gooner. Which match came close to sending you into cardiac arrest? Stoke, take your pick, or the 3-3 Liverpool, or the 2-2 against Chelsea?
Oh, I have to say Liverpool. Most definitely. I mean, I've never felt palpitations like that before in my life while watching a football game. It has to be Liverpool, hands down for me.
Yeah, sorry, he didn't say Stoke, he said stroke.
No, I got you. I was wondering why he would say
it. Yeah, I was thinking myself after I said it. I thought, what fucking close game was Stoke? Okay, thank you, buddy, for that one. Savvy, another one from Vish. Perhaps it's just my imagination. Do we tend to favour building our attacks from the left with Sanchez? Very rarely do we utilise the right wing unless it's on the counter.
Yeah, I think we have answered it before on the pod today only. Ozil's never on the right side, so definitely Alexis stays on his side, so definitely we are going to favour the attack from that side. Ozil is always roaming around in that midfield, so there's not an outlier on the right side. So, yeah, we favour the attack from that side, and when we are playing with four at the back and we have a play on the right side, that is not the case, so it's all down to our tactics and formation, so it really doesn't bother me that we are building the attacks from the left side more.
Okay. Schwinn, I have to go back to you, mate, because the boys from the Gooners in USA, and they're a good bunch of lads over there. So question one, how much did it cost Schwinn to get his passenger seat disinfected on Sunday evening? Must be a story behind that one.
Not really. I think Mike's just being self-deprecating. The story goes that we just met up in the morning and I drove him to the pub where we watch Arsenal games. So he's just having a crack at it. But no, okay. He's just being a funny guy, which he is. So anyone listening to this should go listen to their pod, Gooners in the USA. Those guys are fantastic.
Yeah, good lads, good lads. He's also done another question. Question two, and I'll throw it to you as well, Schwinn. Can you name a better, more entertaining PL game this season for the neutral than yesterday v Chelsea?
No, not really. I don't think I would go as far as saying that Arsenal has been perhaps the most entertaining team this season. I mean, the opening game against Leicester, the United game could also be seen as very thrilling from a neutral's point of view, and of course the game against Liverpool.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think the United game was better thriller than the Chelsea game for me because there were numerous chances. We were clearly the better team and we lost the game. So for neutral, I think that's a better game for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue Liverpool still, just because of the magnanimity of the whole game. I thought it was absolutely crazy. So for me, Liverpool would have to be the one as well.
Tony, you got one, Mark?
It's a bit, going back to the heart attack question, it would be Leicester. Definitely, I was surprised no one mentioned that at the time. I know Strange just mentioned it now, but in terms of the best game for neutral, I think Chelsea, just because I think the quality was a lot better than say the Liverpool game was more. I don't know, it was amateur. I know we spoke about some podcast time. The defending was absolutely awful. Whereas you look at the game the other day, and none of the goals came from rank complete like devastatingly bad errors, whereas they did in the Liverpool game. So I think that because the quality was better, I think the Chelsea game would have been better for a neutral.
Okay. Another one from Vish for you, Tony. Given that Alex Iwobi is nowhere near good enough for the first team, would it not be wise to send him out on loan? Perhaps a deal to sign Mahrez with Iwobi on loan for this season?
The problem is that I don't rate Iwobi, and I'm probably going to get some hate from people, Nigerians, that think he's the best player ever. But I'm not an Iwobi fan, but we are light on numbers. I mean, you look, Ozil was out. He was a natural replacement. You'd say, look, maybe there's Welbeck that's got an argument in that. But so if you sell one of them two, you've only got one player should Welbeck be out. I think in terms of Iwobi's career, it'd be good for him to go on loan, but I'm not sure we're in a place where we're able to do that.
And we've just lost all our Nigerian listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, Schwinn. I think you must have, I don't know, it might have been Schwinn or Savvy. Somebody tweeted out something along the lines about Czech saving a penalty or something happened. So Vish has added.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
Okay, so Vish has added, if Czech saves a penalty for Arsenal, will the earth stop rotating and England will win the World Cup in Russia?
I think the earth stopping to rotate is more likely than English winning than the England team winning the World Cup right now, especially if Jack Wilshere is not going to the World Cup. Because without him, that team doesn't stand a chance. Without Adam Lallana and Jack Wilshere, that team doesn't stand a chance. Although, to be fair, Harry Kane is scoring goals out of the ass right now. So if that form continues, then England could have a shout. But no, Czech is not going to save a penalty, so this question is redundant.
Yeah, but hang on. England, they got Walcott. He wants minutes and he wants to make that team. He'll make a big difference that team.
He's too good for them. I think that's my feeling. I think that's why they don't play him.
It probably is.
I think with the quality they have, I don't know why they drop him.
Okay, that's all the questions, and thank you for your questions, guys, at @clockend_talk. We also tried our fucking hardest to push the VoiceBite app. Well, I did anyway. I was like, happy to hear from you on VoiceBite. You can download that VoiceBite app and I'll play it on this podcast, and the boys can answer your questions as well. I'll give it probably one or two more weeks. If we don't get no more questions, then I'll give it the fucking punt. I'm not going to keep trying to promote a dead horse. So. Okay, you can follow us at @clockend_talk. You guys got anything else to add before we go?
Football culture?
Football culture, yes, thank you. Yes, you can. I haven't got the shit up here, but you can follow them at Football Culture, CLTRE, by memory. And or football culture hyphen shit. What is that, Tony? Football hyphen.
So their website is football hyphen culture. Their Twitter is @footballCLTRE. For any viewers outside the UK, their football shirts are pretty cheap. If you're in the UK, they're about the same price as Sports Direct. So just go down there because you can go and pick it up.
Right, thank you. And our next match coming up is
Forest on Sunday.
I think not. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll be back. We'll be back sometime after that one. Okay, guys, thanks. That'll wrap it up, eh?
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll see you all next week.